Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
And from the Quicken Loan Studios, this is the Jim Rome Show, Mortgage Confidently with Quicken Loans. Hour number two, we are going to talk a lot of NBA basketball. The opening games last night, the Warriors get their rings. They look like rings. I'm not really sure, but they were beautiful. I wish I had one. They were incredible. I would love to know what the value of each one of those rings is. It's pretty remarkable. Sam Amick, who now is covering the NBA for The Athletic, nice enough to spend a couple minutes with us. He was in Oakland last night. We'll talk to him about that and a couple of other things. Sam, it's Grant Napier. Thanks for coming into the jungle. How are you?
Doing great, Grant. Thanks for having me, sir.
Yeah, you made the move to The Athletic, and I loved reading your story on the Lakers pertaining to Jeannie Buss with a conversation with Kobe Bryant. You really went into depth. I would think that for someone in this business, that's kind of like a throwback. You're able to now go in depth and peel off the layers of some of these stories.
100%. I couldn't agree more. I mean, that one was fun to write. Coming in, you know, I think it was 5,000 words, which, to be honest, it's been quite a while since I was kind of stretching the writing muscles that way. But, you know, that is kind of what I think we are trying to hang our hat on with this new gig at The Athletic is getting deeper, telling the real stories. And the Lakers stuff, I mean, I think even if you're not a Lakers fan, there was so much curiosity about what led up to them getting to LeBron. And the one part of the story we didn't really know to this extent was just the part that Kobe played. So no shocker there. You know, Kobe was part of the process, convinced Jeannie to get rid of Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak and clean house before going after the greatest player in the game.
All right, let's talk about what you witnessed last night in Oakland. And I was kind of, I don't want to say surprised, but I listened to the post-game comments of Steve Kerr and then Kevin Durant. And we know about the Warriors' expectations. And to me, the real challenge for Golden State is to keep motivated during the regular season. So let's start with that.
Yeah, no, I think that's they learned last year that was going to, you know, be something that could trip you up. You know, I don't know that, you know, we forget now kind of what the path was to the championship last year. And, you know, but all the way up until that point when they get pushed to the brink by the Rockets in the conference finals, they were battling this malaise that I think was the product of, you know, just having so much success for so long and the human factor coming into play, right, where it's not fresh anymore. You don't have things day in and day out to keep you on edge. It's funny because I've debated this with other people, you know, even picking up DeMarcus Cousins, who's not going to play for quite some time. You know, I think it adds, you know, a different energy to the room that honestly, you know, even if it's not always positive energy, it kind of wakes them up and it gives them something new to kind of sink their teeth into. And last year they readily admitted that there were days in the Warriors office where they got sick and tired of hearing from each other, seeing each other. And, you know, it's not even anything personal, like they've got some big superstar rifts going on. It's just, you know, where they were at. And so I think this year they're probably, you know, older and wiser, and they're going to be okay on that front.
Sam Amick from The Athletic. And, of course, thanks to social media, we're able to talk about these things. As I saw where Kevin Durant's brother put something, I believe it was on Instagram, saying, "Yes, sir, brother, filling the hand up before we get out of here." And the reason why we're talking about that, there's a lot of speculation on whether Kevin Durant's going to be a Warrior after this season. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because for me, Grant, in the playoffs last year, and in hindsight, I kind of wish I would have dug a little deeper and had more conversations at that time about where Kevin's state of mind was. Because in hindsight, I look back at it, and there were a lot of indications that people wondered, you know, if he might shock the world and bounce this past summer. And obviously, that didn't happen. I remember talking to Draymond Green in the middle of the playoffs about Kevin and just flat out asking him, like, do you feel like you have a good feel for the idea that he's definitely coming back? And being surprised when Draymond's response was that he was just kind of focused on his job and he essentially didn't answer the question. So going forward, I think what we're looking at here is, and again, this is a good problem to have if you're Kevin, because you are filling your hand up with rings. But I think if I'm in Kevin's shoes, the one thing he probably still grapples with is that, you know, you went to the Warriors and it's mission accomplished at every step to this point. But anybody who's been at Oracle Arena, spent any time in that environment, knows that there's always going to be a difference between the way that those fans react to Steph Curry and the way they react to anybody else, including Kevin Durant, which is to say that if Kevin kind of misses that feeling that he had in OKC, where you are the kind of the end-all be-all of what that franchise is building and doing. If that's something that he maybe now realizes he wishes he kind of had back in his life, he's going to have to get it elsewhere. I just think that's a reality, whether it's New York, whether it's, you know, anywhere else. I think Kevin's future is definitely uncertain.
Sam, opening night, most of the teams are playing tonight. We have the showdown tomorrow. What a great way to start off in Portland with the Lakers and LeBron going up to the Pacific Northwest. I'm trying to analyze this from 30 teams. I've got three teams that I could see winning an NBA title, barring injury. What do you think about that? How many teams right now do you think realistically could win a championship this year?
I mean, at most, my list is I think, four deep. I assume we got the same three with Golden State, Houston, Boston.
Correct.
And maybe, I don't know. I'm bullish on Kawhi Leonard as a player, and so I'm trying to not undersell what he might be capable of being part of with the Raptors. And that's a team that was top five in offense and defense last year, but then we saw the same old script in the postseason where they just couldn't kind of show out when it mattered most. Kawhi, when he's healthy, when he's not mired in some mysterious controversy like he was last year in San Antonio, is a guy who absolutely shows up in the postseason, finals MVP right out the gate early in his career. So, you know, maybe Toronto turns into something special, but they've got questions. You know, Kyle Lowry's getting older, and so you're probably right. I think it might be those three teams. And I spent a lot of time around Houston recently, and I find them really interesting because they swear that their defense is not going to take a step backwards, even though they lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Mbamute, and they swear the Carmelo Anthony experiment is going to work.
How's their defense? Explain to me how their defense is not going to suffer when you lose two outstanding defensive players. I got to see that to believe it.
No, I hear you, and it's funny. I'm doing a little story on this topic this week. I'm going to break it down. So I was talking to Sean Livingston last night about the Rockets defense, and I told him, I said, let me put on my Rockets PR hat and I'll give you the spin and you tell me what you think. So their spin, you know, whether you agree or not, is that Michael Carter Williams and James Ennis are going to be, you know, guys who come in and give you 120% all the time and then have very, very, very defined roles. They're never going to be looking for their shot. They know that they're simply there to fill the defensive gap that was left by Trevor and to a lesser degree by Luke as far as the roles. D'Antoni, you know, Mike D'Antoni is singing that same song that, you know, those guys are going to be able to fill the gap. They're also saying that P.J. Tucker continuing to evolve into one of the best defenders in the game, Clint Capela getting better, you know, Chris Paul being the head of that snake. But the hard part for Mike, Grant, is that, man, rotation-wise, he's going to be all season long, essentially having to make sure that Melo and James Harden don't share the floor all that often, because defensively, basically a train wreck.
Sam Amick from The Athletic joining us. You know, a team that I don't think is capable right now of winning a championship, but I'm really curious to see how well they are going to do, and I'm going to see them tonight doing the Kings and the Jazz. I think Utah has I'm not sold at point guard because of Ricky Rubio's shooting, but I like Dante Exum. But we saw how good they were last year when Rudy Gobert was not hurt, Sam. When he was on the floor, they were a dominant team. Give me your thoughts on the Jazz.
I love the Jazz. Honestly, you know, I don't know what a good – I should do some research and figure out what a good comp is for a team like this Jazz team that maybe did shock the world and take that jump and win a championship. Because, you know, that list that we talked about earlier, if you just want to talk about on paper, like, I might put Utah on that list. Now, they've got deficiencies, but I keep – saying this over and over and over again because I don't think people, you know, are having it sink in. I mean, the last 4 months of the regular season, the only better team in the NBA was Houston other than Utah. And if you, you know, subscribe to the power of net rating, which is, you know, in my opinion, the best quantifier of success or failure, they were far and away the best team in the NBA. Now, the record didn't reflect it. They were a couple games behind the Rockets, but they're tremendous. I mean, their defense was the best in the league for the last 4 months. And Gobert is a monster. And, you know, Donovan Mitchell getting better. I think some fantastic lessons learned from the postseason last year, moments when he was dropping 20-point quarters and just dominating, you know, all-stars. And then other moments when he kind of learned about getting stagnant on the offensive end. And, you know, the Rubio thing, yeah, he can't shoot, but, man, he can sure defend. and he can sure move that ball and help Donovan get even better looks. And they are bullish on Dante Exum, too. So I think Utah is going to be a handful all year.
Talk to me about the situation in Minnesota. And I guess Jimmy Butler is going to play tonight against San Antonio. And he had a Dodger hat on after shoot-around today when he talked to the press. But if they were to get off to a poor start, does Tom Thibodeau survive this in Minneapolis?
Probably. I don't know anymore, to be honest with you. That's not the best answer.
I know.
To know these things.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just I can't get a read on Glenn Taylor, their owner. I don't have any reason to think that he is comfortable with the idea of blowing up the management side right now. And that's the tricky part with Tom is that he's got 3 years left, this one and two more, $24 million on that contract. And it pales in comparison to what Glenn Taylor is paying Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. And so you would conceivably say, why would you let those assets, not to make it so cold and inhuman, but like depreciate in this environment because of $24 million. But, you know, I don't know. Tom's got an incredible ability to survive amidst chaos, and he's doing that right now. And there's some sick part of me that just loves that Jimmy is still there, and I'm dying to see how this goes for the next couple weeks because if they somehow turn this into a positive situation, it'll be more, you know, one of the most memorable situations that I've ever covered. Jimmy he's just something else. Personality wise, you know, he's had tough times in the last two locker rooms he's been in. So you start wondering, is this a bad apple type thing? And then you look at it and you go, man, he really does compete like nobody else in the game, or at least up there with the best of the best. And then you recently, Grant, you have his teammates still publicly saying decent things about him. So, you know, maybe we're crazy. Maybe this is going to work. The Dodger hat thing, you know, he's a showman. We saw that the other day. He had, you know, ESPN all teed up for that interview after he lost his mind at practice. You know, he's kind of putting on his WWE hat and how this thing's unfolding.
I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to this season, and I was curious last night when I saw the Boston Celtics starting lineup. You know, they had Irving out there with Tatum. They had Jaylen Brown, Gordon Hayward starting with Al Horford. You know, you look at what Rick Carlisle's doing in Dallas. You know, he's got Luka Doncic starting at power forward, all right? And I can't wait to see the unconventional lineups throughout the league this year. It seems like, as you well know, we're trending more and more to having three or four forwards and wing players on the floor with either one big man or, you know what I'm saying, the combinations are crazy, aren't they?
100%. I mean, in the preseason, it didn't work very well, but, you know, Kyle Kuzma was playing the five at one point.
Wow.
You see that a lot, you know, and I think that has a ripple effect. There's the chicken or the egg thing, right, when it comes to the draft and the types of players that teams go after, because in the old days, you'd say, well, we have a point guard. We don't need another point guard. Well, that's kind of not how you're supposed to think anymore. You have these unconventional lineups. The Celtics will probably be at the top of that list. I don't know. You know, I keep hearing people talk about the Celtics as if they're a hockey team because they're talking about how they can throw multiple lines out there. And, I mean, that's a heck of a luxury to have, you know, and it's true. They throw waves of talent at you with the kind of versatility. You know, switchability is a major kind of buzzword in the NBA right now. The Rockets defense and at its best is really good because of switchability, because the guys, you know, one through five can switch and survive. And that's where most teams right now are trying to get to.
Great stuff. I assume I'll see you tonight. Are you in Sacramento? I know you were in Oakland last night. And are you going to be going to Portland tomorrow? Because I think that's a game that most basketball fans just can't wait to see LeBron and how that's going to unfold for the Lakers. Well, before we say goodbye, give me your thoughts on how you think that turns out. You know, there's a dynamic with Luke Walton, with Rondo, who loves to be a coach.
Right.
You know, we know about LeBron. I mean, how do you see that dynamic working?
It'll be fascinating. I'm not going to Portland. I'm actually heading down to L.A. in a couple days to catch, you know, those guys in game number two and three. The LeBron-Rondo stuff is interesting because they really are. I think if you poll players in the NBA, they probably would win the awards for highest basketball IQ, the two guys that are now side-by-side with this team. And the other night, watching them against the Warriors, it looked like LeBron and Rondo were part of Luke Walton's coaching staff, or he was part of their coaching staff. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that's going to be – he's going to have kind of no ego, and I think he has the capability of doing that. It reminds me a little bit, honestly, Alvin Gentry, Pelicans head coach, spent a lot of time with Luke, with the Warriors, and Alvin and I have talked about how coaching Rajon Rondo means kind of letting up, you know, giving up more of your space. And I think Luke has that capability, and he's going to have to, because he has a ton of pressure. We all know if this thing gets off to a bad start, that, you know, all eyes are going to be on him.
Sam, great stuff. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you, Grant.
All right. Sam Amick from The Athletic joining us right here. The Jim Rome Show. A couple of open segments coming up. So clones get on board at 800-636-8686. Grant Napier in the Jungle. Jim back in this chair tomorrow right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Jim Rome Show.
Clone, CBS's Super Bowl season continues Sunday. It's a triple header. First, live from London, the Titans take on the Chargers, then Tom Brady and the Pats, coming off an incredible win over the Chiefs, collide with Khalil Mack and the Bears, followed by a big NFC East showdown. It's the Cowboys and the Redskins. Wake up with the NFL today at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. Start your full day of football on CBS. And good stuff from Sam Amick. You know, we're talking about that game tomorrow up in Portland. That will be the last of the teams not to play, whether it's last night. You saw the two games, pretty much a full slate of games, and then that's the nationally televised game tomorrow up in Portland. And I think what's interesting about this matchup tomorrow, and we talked about this with Sam, how is Luke Walton going to split the minutes with Rondo and Ball? And I will say one thing about Rajon Rondo, because I spent a year with him in Sacramento. And this guy is all about basketball. I will tell you, we would get on to the bus, and all the players normally walk to the back of the bus on the way to the game. Rajon would get on the bus with his laptop open, and he would sit in the second row to the left, right? And he would be looking at scouting and video of the other team the entire time to the arena. And then you would walk into the locker room maybe 45 minutes before the game. And there's Rajon sitting in front of his locker with his laptop, again, going over everything. Rajon Rondo could coach in the NBA and do, I think, an incredible job. Because his, as Sam said, his basketball IQ is just through the roof. And he is a tremendous playmaker. So if you're Luke Walton and you look at LeBron and you look at everything else that's going on with the Lakers, okay, he said, hey, they've tried Kyle Kuzma at the five position. That's the NBA. All right, where's Brandon Ingram at as he starts his third year? Then can you play Rondo and Ball at times together? See, I don't think you can, because they're not great shooters. And I still think in the NBA, the game is about shooting and three-point shooting. That's why the Rockets were so good last year. They don't care. They're going to take 30, 40 threes a game. They're going to give up layups. They're going to come down on a three-on-one. They are going to dribble into the paint, and they're going to kick out to the corner for a three. They're going to give up two to get three. That's the way the Rockets play. I know LeBron's great. You know LeBron's great. I like some of the surrounding pieces. What happens with the minutes between Rondo and Lonzo Ball? I think that is going to be one of the more interesting things. All right, let's get back to Long Beach, and it is Paul. Paul, you're on the Jim Rome Show with Grant Napier. Go ahead.
Grant, what is up, buddy?
What's happening, man?
Hell, it's been a long time since I've been in the Jungle, and I got to tell you, I'm watching on CBS, and you fired me up. I just had to call in this morning because the way you got into that kid's face that was talking about Kershaw. You know, I've been a lifelong Dodger fan.
Are you talking about the 500 postseason Clayton Kershaw, the guy that's
two and five? In the fifth or sixth inning.
Right.
And
I want to make sure we're talking about the same guy that's 2-5 and six NLCS starts with an ERA of 5.24. I want to make sure, is that the Clayton Kershaw we're talking about?
We're talking about that exact Clayton Kershaw. Okay. And let me tell you, I've been a Dodger fan going to the stadium since 1974 when the Toy Cannon was in center field. You know that team? That was the last year they had the World Series in the daytime. I don't know if you remember that, Grant, of course, you know, when the World Series had to be played in the day.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah, anyways, you were dead on. You were talking about these Manny Machados and Odell Beckhams, and it really fired me up because I can't stand when a player has all the talent in the world, right, and he's going to bring that crappy attitude into the locker room. And the word that you didn't throw out there is cancer, man. A lot of these guys are cancers. They got all this money. They know they got all this talent. You could tell them the way they act. And one of the other guys that I really didn't like was Nick Young, the way his nonchalant, cancerous attitude that he had, on the bench. He really didn't give a damn if he was going to play hard or not. And
all right, Paul. Thanks, man. We got to roll, but I'm not on the air calling Manny Machado and Odell Beckham cancers. You are. All right. Now, what I'm saying is there are distractions. Now, Beckham and Machado are different. It's separate categories here. Beckham is a distraction. He's a drama queen. I don't know how you would define cancer if in sports. Okay. In other words, I'm not ready to say that Odell Beckham is a cancer to the New York Giants. What I think he is, I think he's a big distraction. Now, if you want to call that cancer, that's your verbiage. But to me, he's a big distraction. And back to what was it, Craig, that we had on in Long Beach? Listen, I get the fact that Clayton Kershaw could go out and throw a shutout this afternoon. He's that good. We get that. But I don't know about you. I judge my athletes by how they do in the postseason. And Clayton Kershaw is, he is a Hall of Fame pitcher. But he's not a Hall of Fame postseason pitcher. There's a difference. It's like David Price. The guy's never won a playoff game. Do you want that guy? Do you want to give the ball to a pitcher like David Price, who has never won in the postseason? All right, Clayton Kershaw today. Everybody assumes that the Dodgers are going to win against the Brewers today. Well, if you go by Kershaw's record in the NLCS, all right, think about this. 2-5, 5.24 ERA. 5.24 ERA. Lifetime postseason, 8 up, 8 down, 4.26 ERA. I mean, you can't ignore the numbers. Now, you could say, well, a pitcher, he's got a very low ERA. And, okay, well, that's different. 5.24 is not a low ERA. It's not like he was a guy that had bad luck because his team didn't score. So, again, I understand what we talk about with Clayton Kershaw. It's the same thing I always used to say about Donovan McNabb. Didn't play well in the postseason. Was not a good postseason quarterback. Excellent regular season quarterback, not a good postseason quarterback. So I ask you, do you want your athlete to be better in the postseason or the regular season? I mean, Robert Horry didn't get the nickname Big Shot Bob by accident. Okay, there is something to that. Reggie Jackson, who was very good in the regular season, didn't get the nickname Mr. October by mistake. There's a reason why he was nicknamed Mr. October. You need athletes that are able to excel on the biggest stage in the biggest moments, because there are a lot of guys that can't do it. I've seen it in the NBA over 30 years. I can name you a lot of players that get it done in the regular season and are not able to do it in the postseason. And they don't even look like the same player. We see it all the time in the NFL, right? I just gave you an example, McNabb with the Eagles. Go ask any Eagles fan how McNabb played in the postseason. Do you know how many times he was booed off the field in the playoffs? I mean, come on now. Let's just call it the way it is. And Clayton Kershaw, for as dominant, and let's face it, the guy is without question one of the best pitchers of his generation. I don't think that is debatable. I don't think you can argue that, except for when the calendar turns to October 1st. At that point, he has been very ordinary. And you ask yourself, how can a guy be that good, that dominant, that great in the regular season, and yet the calendar turns to October, and you're like, who's that pitching? 8-8, 4.26 lifetime postseason. That doesn't sound like a Hall of Famer to me. Let's just acknowledge that. All right, we are at the bottom of the hour. Phone calls when we come back at 800-636-8686, our sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Brett Napier on CBS Sports Radio.
Did you see Bill Belichick's comments asked about Khalil Mack? Someone asked him, is Khalil Mack as good as Lawrence Taylor? And the only reason why I'm stating this is Bill Belichick actually answered the question that was more than one sentence. That's why it caught my eye. Quote, wait a minute. We're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. Put everybody down below that. With a lot of respect to a lot of good players, we're talking about Lawrence Taylor. Of course, he was the defensive coordinator for the Giants when LT played there. It's funny that he said that. I got a call on my show in Sacramento about 2 weeks ago, someone comparing Khalil Mack to Lawrence Taylor, and I kind of laughed. Khalil Mack's a heck of a player. Khalil Mack is one of the best defensive players in football. But let's not get carried away, all right? I mean, if you watched football in the 80s, then you wouldn't have to ask that question. Because, you know, Khalil Mack is good. But, you know, again, he's no Lawrence Taylor. Something else I've been talking a lot about, and I want to get your take. And give us a call at 800-636-8686. John Gruden coming out and saying we're not tanking. And I talked about this on my show in Sacramento on Monday because I asked whether the Raiders were tanking. Because in the NBA, tanking is a very popular term, right? We talk about teams that are not playing all out with their rosters at the end of the season because they try to get a few more ping pong balls. Now, this coming year for the NBA lottery, they've changed the percentages around. We don't need to get into that. Just know that it's going to be different this year. So John Gruden is upset because of the notion that the Raiders may be tanking. And he was adamant about, we're not tanking. We're not showing up at 4 a.m. trying to lose. But let me ask you this. If you're a Raider fan, if you're John Gruden, could you imagine a worse 6-week period for a guy starting his second tenure with the Raiders? Now, I covered the Raiders when John Gruden was the coach the first time around and Bruce Allen was the general manager. Matter of fact, I'll share a quick story with you. I was doing the Raider games in the preseason on television. And Bruce Allen was the general manager. So I am at practice at Napa. And Bruce Allen goes, Al wants to meet you. I said, okay. So Al Davis was in the middle of the two practice fields at Napa. So I walk around the field with Bruce Allen, the general manager. And he said, Al, this is Grant Napier. He's going to be doing our games during the preseason. Al shakes my hand, but he didn't look at me because he's looking at practice. He did not miss a play while he was talking to me. Where are you from, Grant? I said, well, I'm from New York. Well, Al's from New York. So right away, he was like, started talking to me, asking me about where I grew up and blah, blah, blah. So at the end of my conversation, Al says to me, you know what the most important thing is, right? I said, what's that, sir? He said, to salute the flag. You always need to salute the flag. Do you have that? I said, yes, sir. Just always salute the flag. So we get done with our conversation, and I'm walking back down the other direction with Bruce Allen. And Bruce goes, you know what Al meant by saluting the flag, don't you? I go, you know, I got to be honest, Bruce, I really don't, but I didn't want to be disrespectful. And he said, that means that when you get done with your telecast, you want to end it on a positive note. You want to leave the fans with a good impression. That's Al's version of saluting the flag. I'm like, okay. Our first game, we're in Dallas at the old Texas Stadium. First preseason game. I believe the final score was Dallas 52 and the Raiders 17. And I'm doing the game with Jim Plunkett. Plunk, the two-time Super Bowl quarterback. Love Plunk. One of the nicest, great guys that you could ever meet. I love Jim Plunkett. I can't say a bad word about Plunk. So anyway, we're doing the game. Game ends. And I say, you know, we'll come back and wrap it up. The final score, Dallas 50. I think it was 52-7. Dallas 52, the Raiders 17. I take my headset off during a commercial. I go, hey, Plunk, I'm going to let you salute the flag on this one. And Plunk goes, oh, no, no, no. I go, Plunk, Come on, you're the one that's got to salute the flag here. You're Mr. Raider. You're the two times. What am I going to say? You just lost 52-17. But the one thing about being around the Raiders back then, every single thing went through Al. Al had his hands in everything. And Al wanted to know your opinion. Al would always ask you how you felt about things. And he didn't always take your what you said and implement it. But he wanted to know what everyone was thinking. And I always admired that about Al. But back to John Gruden. So you're 1-5, right? You got embarrassed down against the Chargers in a game that had 95% Raider fans. And you go out and play that badly. Then you go to London. Now, first of all, for those of you that live on the West Coast, have you ever flown to London? You know, it's not like going to Salt Lake City. It's 10 hours, all right? It's an 8-hour time difference. Now, I'm just going to ask you, if you were a head coach, if you were running a team, would you arrive on a Friday for a Sunday game on a 10-hour flight with an 8-hour time difference? Or would you go maybe a couple days earlier, like Seattle did, like most teams? Like, I didn't understand that. Again, I don't think the Raiders are tanking, but is that the best way to get ready for a game after a 10-hour flight and an 8-hour time difference? Now, that's unbelievable. So the Raiders get destroyed in Seattle. I mean, they looked horrible. The Seahawks dominated every facet of the game. So I want to get back to my question. Do I think the Raiders are tanking? You know what? Yeah, I do. They started tanking the minute they traded Khalil Mack. That's when they started tanking. Because there's no way that you are going to be a better football team this year when you trade Khalil Mack and you get nothing back for him this year. So John Gruden can say, we're not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to tank. I'm not saying you're intentionally trying to tank, but it sure looks bad, doesn't it? I mean, if you watch and Phil talked about the first 4 weeks, and I thought that week one against the Rams on that Monday night, I thought it was more of the Rams who didn't play their starters a snap during the preseason. To me, it was about the Rams kind of like getting the kinks out, and they used the first two quarters as a scrimmage to kind of get in sync and get some rhythm. And then in the second half, it was like men against boys at the Coliseum. Like, it was not even a contest. And the Rams just ran away and hid from the Raiders in that second half. And the Denver game was close. You know, the Raiders could have, probably should have won that game. You know, there was a fourth down play. The fullback drops the ball. They had the punt. I should say it was a third down play. I beg your pardon. If he catches that ball, the game's over and the Raiders win. So Phil's right. That was a very competitive second game. How about the Browns game that they won? Maybe the worst call we've seen this year in the NFL, right? Remember when the Browns stripped Derek Carr and recovered the fumble? And the officials kept it Raider ball? I mean, that was about it. That may have been the worst call we've seen this year. That would have ended the game. Not to mention the spot on the Hyde run, which I still do not understand. So you could make the argument the Raiders are lucky to even have one win. And the last 2 weeks, they have not been competitive. So if you're a fan of the Raiders and you hear John Gruden, has John Gruden lost credibility among Raider Nation? What has John Gruden done? We heard that he's this quarterback whisperer, right? He's a guy, he's a quarterback guru. Can you tell me after watching Derek Carr play for 6 weeks that he looks like he's getting any better? Now, in all fairness to Derek Carr, the offensive line was horrible on Sunday, so I'm going to give him a pass for that game. But I'm not going to give him a pass for the previous games. Derek Carr, to me, does not look like a quarterback that's getting any better. Matter of fact, if you look at Derek Carr 2 years ago, when Phil came on in hour one, and he said he did 3 or 4 Raider games that year, 2 years ago, for CBS, and talked about, you know, how well Derek Carr played and everything else, and if you look at Derek Carr last year and you look at Derek Carr this year, ask yourself this question. Is Derek Carr going to be the quarterback of the Oakland Raiders next year? Could you see a scenario where John Gruden feels that Derek Carr is not his guy and they trade him and decide with their first round pick, which is going to be a pretty good pick, they go out and get a quarterback. Could you see that scenario unfolding? Because a lot of the people I've talked to around the league say, yeah, they could see that. Because if John Gruden does not feel that Derek Carr is the guy, and based on these first six games, how could you, if you're John Gruden, how can you look at Derek Carr and go, oh, yeah, that's the guy? I don't see how you could. I mean, the guy's not showing any improvement at all. Look at all the other quarterbacks in the NFL that are even younger than Derek Carr. Look at the improvement they've made. I mean, do you know that 2 years ago, right now, 2 years ago, not last year, 2 years ago, the middle of October, do you know what we were all talking about? How the Rams made a huge mistake when they drafted Jared Goff. People were talking about Fisher and the Rams and that they blew the draft. Remember everyone talking about, gee, Jared Goff can't even get on the field. He's not playing. That was 2 years ago. And you know that if you had the MVP voting right now, Jared Goff would probably be your MVP of the National Football League. So you look at the ascent of a guy like Jared Goff. Look at how Pat Mahomes is doing with Kansas City. One start under his belt. Patrick Mahomes. I mean, if you went to a Chiefs game and you didn't know anything about the Chiefs and you didn't know anything about Patrick Mahomes, you would swear that you're watching Tom Brady in his prime or someone like that. This is a guy that had one start before this year. How does that happen? Look at some of the other quarterbacks around the NFL. And then look at Derek Carr and ask yourself, is Derek Carr improving? So is John Gruden, is he losing credibility already through 6 weeks of the NFL season with Raider fan? If he's the one that clearly is making the decisions, I mean, how's Reggie McKenzie going to maintain his job as general manager there? I think the Raiders just got major problems. And I think it's pretty clear what the game plan is. And I would love to hear from Raider fan. I don't think they give a darn about anything going on in Oakland. Everything they're doing is to gear up for Vegas and their shiny, beautiful new stadium in 2 years. Everything. So I don't think they're trying to win now. John Gruden can say whatever he wants. The eye test tells me they're not winning right now. And they're not doing anything that's getting them close to winning. And their quarterback is regressing. He's not improving. And the offensive line is getting worse. It's not getting better. And their defense stinks. And they're not getting better. They're getting worse. So how can anyone tell me that the Raiders are not, quote unquote, tanking? They sure don't look good. And when they move into Vegas, maybe if the draft picks next year all pan out, if Derek Carr is the guy, which I don't think he is, who will be the quarterback for the Raiders when they move into that beautiful new stadium in Las Vegas? And don't you think that's what they're doing right now? Aren't they just setting everything up for their move to Vegas? I made a prediction before the season began that if the Raiders got off to a bad start, that after their bye week, there would be 20 to 30,000 no-shows at the Coliseum. And I'm sticking to that. They have a bye week, and then they play the Colts. And I'm just telling you, I will be surprised if there aren't a lot of empty seats at the Coliseum after this bye week. I would be very surprised. All right, speaking of NFL, speaking about all the problems that some teams are having on the offensive line, some of the other issues. And, yeah, we are also going to talk some college football. How about all the upsets that we saw this past weekend? Georgia going down, Washington going down. We can go on and on. We're going to talk some football with Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. That is coming up at the start of hour number three. Then we'll have a couple of open segments for you, and we'll take some phone calls to close out the show. All right? So don't go anywhere because Chris Landry, a little college talk, a little NFL talk, LandryFootball.com. It's all coming up. Jim is back in this chair tomorrow. Grant Napier, though, in the jungle today on CBS Sports Radio.